All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. This is a very exciting episode. We've got Graham on Skype. This never happens.
Oh,
he's on the road.
I'm in beautiful Chicago, Illinois. So if you are in, I'm doing the downtown Zanies tonight at 8 o'clock, and then I'm out the Rosemont Zanies Wednesday through Saturday. So if you're in the Chicago area, come buy a ticket.
And this is it's episode 456. Can you do math while you're in Chicago, or do you have to be in the studio?
It's too cold in Chicago for me to do math in my head. Actually, that would be episode 962.
See, 90. It's all about the proximity.
It's episode 912. halfway to 912. I did that in my head.
So how are the shows going in Chicago?
They've been really cool. You know, I was in the St. Charles Zanies earlier in the last weekend, Thursday through Saturday. And then I've been at the downtown Zanies the last two nights. It's been great. There's been some fans of Comedy Film Nerds have come out, and a bunch of political vigilante fans. You know, Chicago has a lot of, left-wing socialist wing nuts. So it's really good to have them come out to the shows.
Yeah. I'm going to interject here. Hi, guys. Murray Valeriano. They don't introduce you on the show.
But only about halfway through.
I thought it was exciting because I was here. But I'm getting cock-blocked by Skype. My question to you, Graham Elwood. Are you doing, and I apologize, we're good friends, I don't even know this. Are you doing your political vigilante? Are you doing the Progressive Aggressive Tour, or is this solo Graham Elwood? What are we looking forward to tonight?
Thank you, sir. I'm just headlining, not doing political vigilante or progressive comedy tour. Next month, Ron Placone and I are starting the Progressive Comedy Tour back up, and we are going to the Gulf States, March 10th through the 13th. That's actually in 2 weeks. Check that out. All my tickets are available at grahamelwood.com.
And pretend I don't know what the Gulf States are. What would those be?
I don't know. Get a map. Jesus, why is this my problem? No, that's a great question, Murray. We are going to March 10th. We're doing Lafayette, Louisiana. The 11th, we're doing Oxford, Mississippi. The 12th, we're doing Pensacola, Florida. And the 13th, we're in the Big Easy, New Orleans.
No, nice. Excellent. Good time to be there.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be fun. So
weather'll be nice. The oil spill is almost cleaned up.
Yeah. Well, no, they're going to build a wall to protect us from the Gulf of Mexico.
Oh,
okay. So it's good. So it's...
And the golfers are going to pay for it.
Yeah. Graham, I don't know if you know this, but there was an Academy Awards show on Sunday.
What?
Yeah.
Is that what was happening?
Crazy. So, we want to thank all the fans who followed us on the live tweet. Much appreciated. Graham, myself and Neil were all tweeting, and it was a bunch of fun. A couple surprises in the Academy Awards, and a couple of not-so-surprises. But before we get into it and get started, we're going to talk about our Patreon sponsors, who are here every month. This is the final February Patreon sponsor, and Graham is about to get carried off.
Gee, who's in Chicago right now?
Yeah.
Boy, they like their fire trucks here. In the city,
they don't like their air conditioning. Close the window.
I thought it was too cold for fires. So, so, ladies and gentlemen, this gives you the Patreon sponsors. That's the $50 tier. You pay $50. We read your item and your website. And here are the sponsors for February. Johnny Rulon. He's promoting his novel Green Cheek, A Junkie's Guide to Street Magic. It's on Amazon in both digital and hard copy. It's an experimental stream of consciousness novel which follows the exploits of the muse Calliope and her mortal lover T.S. on a journey through time, dreams, and the hidden places of a supernatural America. The website is happyhorrorshowproductions.com, happyhorrorshowproductions.com. And the Audacity Performing Arts Project produces after-school performing arts projects in poor, underfunded, and low-performing schools. Performing arts education is not a luxury. Check them out at audacityperformingarts.com, audacityperformingarts.com. And from Chris Parker Howard, Coffee Over Suicide, a dramedy podcast about mental illness. and choosing life over death one cup of coffee at a time. Get caught up on season one before season two premieres in April. Wherever podcasts are found, find out more at coffeeoversuicide.com. And Alice Frazier, co-host of The Bugle podcast and host of Table with Alice, brings you a series of three genre-bending solo stand-up shows that explore the boundary between comedy and tragedy. The shows were recorded back-to-back as a three-hour show at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival in April 2018 with a binaural microphone, which creates a really cool listening experience. Check out alicefrazier.com, alicefrazier.com. Aaron, stop petting your dog. So,
is that what I hear?
Yeah, he's having a nightmare? Really? No.
All right. How do you know?
Or maybe think he's maybe
your dog's having a nightmare.
And maybe he's thinking he's hosting the Oscars. So Rebecca Evans, the art podcast. When we move past hesitation, we're true to ourselves. We find our own art in life. You want to hear some fun stories and get inspired? Check out The Art, facebook.com/theartpodcast.
Oh, that one sounds fun.
And Graham and I were both on that. It's a really fun podcast.
Yeah, check that out.
La Calavera by Alan Ross, the story of a pirate radio operator who decides to go into the pirate cable TV business. Darren Loney, together with a group of misfits and the questionable guidance of the spiritual advisor in the form of Richard Nixon, gear up to take on the world's largest media conglomerate and its egomaniacal celebrity CEO. Check it out on Amazon and ebook and hard copy. Now, Graham, you're halfway through this book, right?
Halfway is a bold statement.
Yeah.
I don't know, 40, 50 pages in. It's a fun little, it's a fun read. It's a cool book. So I'm enjoying it. And I think it's very, you know, it's kind of right up my alley because it's a big corporate conglomerate media company that's taking over things. And then having Tricky Dick as your spirit guide is pretty impressive. Mm-hmm.
Who gets phone calls in their hotel room?
Yes,
anymore? I don't know what is going on. Like, this condo is just, everything's insane.
Oh, you're in a condo.
Yeah, I thought maybe the fire truck was bringing you a phone.
Yes, yeah. They really want you to have
a landline.
A hard line, a landline. They're big on that in the Windy City.
I'm surprised there's still condo phones in condos, too. I figured they would have screwed the comics and say, fuck it, no phones.
Yeah, take cable out, everything.
Yeah.
So
no, they take care of you here.
I work the improv. Screw zanies.
Yeah. So, ladies and gentlemen, the 91st.
I have a distinct opinion about that, but
I know. As I said that, I was like, maybe we'll talk later.
The 91st Academy Awards, ladies and gentlemen. Now, I will say this. I wasn't sure what it would be like without a host, but I got to say, the show didn't make a great argument for why we need one. I mean, it moved faster.
It really did.
There wasn't a tedious monologue to sit through because sometimes they're great, sometimes they're not so great. Maybe open with a musical number. Not a bad idea.
Seriously, bring Queen out, kick the audience in the nuts right out of the gate, then bring two of the funniest people out and Maya Rudolph. And just get it off right. Get it going right.
Yeah, it was really good. And you watched like the beginning, like, well, that wasn't quite a monologue, but that's what they would be doing if they were hosting. But that's all you need. Just give us a little taste, a couple of jokes, and get into the show. So now, Murray, you were there. What was it like before the show started backstage? What was it like, the anticipation? Did you punch any celebrities in the nuts? What happened?
No, I did not punch any celebrities in the nuts. It was good. It was good. We always, the red carpet was fun. This is my third time there. It's my wife's third nomination, Mary Zoffries. Look her up. This was fun this year.
Now, do you get the same seat when your wife keeps getting nominated? Do they kind of have the costuming section?
They have the costuming section. And it's funny. This year, we sat in our regular seats, which were really far back. And the stage manager came up and said, hey, you guys are, in the second act, so we're just going to move you down front now. Mm-hmm. And they usually move us in commercial breaks. Like, okay, well, we'll go down now. And it was great. It was front row.
Awesome.
We walked down, and I'm like, Mayor, we're about to get front row for Queen, you know, and which is because we're both huge music fans. And so that was great. So, yeah, we sat down the front row for the first two acts, and then they shoved us up into the nosebleeds. Nobody knows that part.
So that did happen during the commercial.
Yeah, that was two commercials that you'll notice where if you watch for the rest of the program, we're not in the front row anymore.
Because we did get to see you when the award was announced for Best Costumes, and every comic in L.A. just went, there's Murray.
Yeah, I know. A couple of bookers like, hey, I saw you. I'm like, great, does that get me a week?
Yeah.
No, but can your wife do my daughter's graduation?
Yeah. You don't even know the half of it, Graham. Holy shit.
So Halloween is coming up, and we need the class dressed.
Mary goes into hibernation around Halloween just so people will leave her alone.
Yeah. I can totally understand that. It's like an accountant after April 15th.
Right, right. Exactly.
It's got to be like the person who owns a pickup truck and people asking to help me move like times 10.
Yeah. And just like the fucking like friend of a friend of a friend, I'll get a text. Hey, can you ask your wife to build this fucking gnome costume I'm working on? I'm like, no.
And I need it in 4 hours.
Yeah, exactly. And can you do it by Tuesday? That'd be great. Thanks.
Here's what you do. You just send them your wife's quotes, and that'll wrap that up.
You'll never hear from them again.
No, that's not a bad idea. I did tell a director of some short this year at the luncheon. The shorts always, we always get seated at the Oscar luncheon. They pair up, they seat everybody from different. So it was like me and Mary. And then it was the producers of Minding the Gap.
Right.
And then it was a director of a short. I don't remember his name. Last time it was Aaron Sorkin, and he was a douche. But why was I saying this? The short, the guy was like, oh man, we'd love to do we'd love for you to do our feature. And I was like,
oh, right.
Get her before she wins.
Yeah.
Because her rate's going up.
So, I happen to have a contract right here.
Yeah. Sign here.
So,
I want to ask you this, Murray, since, you know, we were talking about, they did an opening that was, I agree with you guys. I loved it that they just like kick ass song and then people just being funny out of the gate.
Yeah.
What was the sort of sense that you got from like the people that were there that have been to multiple live Academy Awards? What was their sense of it?
I honestly, just to jump on what Chris was saying, I don't think anybody noticed. You know what I mean? I mean, you can't not, Queen played that little theater like they were playing Hyde Park or Wembley again, or right. even, you know, fucking mm-hmm. Live Aid, you know, mm-hmm. Which they're known for. So it was, there was not an ass in a seat. Mm-hmm. Out of the gate, you're not even like, you're like, if somebody would said, hey, it's Jimmy Kimmel here, they would be like, who?
Right,
you know,
right.
It was just so engulfing. So, you bring out, you know.
So every future Oscar host just texted Kevin Hart, went, nice going.
Yeah, way to go. Way to fuck it up for all of us, buddy. But it was great.
Well, awesome.
I'd like to go on record by saying Mary and I were the first ones standing when Queen opened. We were the first ones up because we were just such huge fans. And the lights went down and the stage manager was like, okay, everybody settle. We're going in 5, 4. And then you heard. And then Mary and I were
great.
Just on our fucking feet, man. Mm-hmm. It was fantastic.
Oh, very cool. Well, it was a great way to open it for sure.
Absolutely.
So, all right, let's get into the categories. Animated short film. It wasn't a big surprise. Pixar won this, especially after they lost Best Animated Feature.
Hold on a second. Where are you at?
I'm at the bottom. We're gonna.
Are you going from back?
Yeah. We're going from back to front.
I want to say too. So a fan of ours, Susan Long, whose Twitter handle is @LongEstate.
I know her.
Spreadsheet. She's great.
Yeah, she's we follow each other.
She put together a score sheet for Comedy Film Nerds Oscar 2019. The picks that we did, Doug, Vincent, Chris, and myself, and it's pretty fantastic. I will retweet it. So anybody following along, or if you just follow her @LongEstate, you can see it. She did this really cool thing. She showed my, Chris, and Doug's, because we always do that, who we think should win and will win.
Right.
And then she showed what all of our picks were and then highlighted the winner, and you can see who got what. So it's a cool mm-hmm. thing to follow along.
Oh, very cool.
But anyway.
Yes. And so we were all kind of on a lot of the same page on animated short film. Pixar usually, especially
they always
it's gonna be, it's pretty close. If they don't, they win it a fair amount of the time,
and
especially
it's bullshit.
Yeah,
it is, man. Yeah. You look at the credits on these Pixar shorts, and they're longer than the short.
Oh, I know. I know. Yeah.
And then you get some of these.
It's literally the whole studio works.
Yeah. And I was talking to the guy who won two years ago, and he's like, well, yeah, they just some suit came in and said, hey, we need a short for the Oscars next year. You're going to start working on it.
Right.
Like, that's how it works. And then they win it 99% of the time.
So, and then the animated feature, I'm really glad to see Spider-Man winning this award, because it was such a great movie. And it
Absolutely.
Was also a great kind of like upset as far as like the status quo on animated features every year, because it's always Disney, it's Pixar, which is Disney.
Right.
And, you know, every once in a while, there's one Japanese one that no one is able to see before the Oscars.
Sure, sure.
And then, but like Isle of Dogs, I would have been perfectly fine if that would have won too, because it was really amazing, the stop motion, the animation, and it was also a great movie. But I was glad to see Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse work and then win. And then for a foreign language film, this was no surprise to any of us.
Oh,
we were
absolutely.
All like, you know, Roma's going to win because it's probably not going to win Best Picture. So this is the award it's definitely going to get.
Oh, for sure. So, absolutely.
And then...
I'm glad it won this. I'm glad Roma won this. But it still deserved Best Picture.
Yeah. we'll get into the... astonishing wins a little later.
And I love Caron's speeches.
It was great.
So eloquent.
What I found fascinating is that, like, when you go up multiple times, he had a different speech every single time.
Oh,
like,
that's right.
I'm wondering, like, did he have each one planned out for, like, if he won the specific category, where it's like, all right, I'm going to prepare three speeches. I don't know how many I'll get to.
Well, that sounds like a lot of
planning. This is number one. This is number two. This is so I don't know. And then now we get into the live action short film. This is the one I really thought Mother was going to win this, but it was Skin.
Jesus Christ, what a fucking rough category.
Yeah.
Holy crap, we're watching these. We're watching these going, oh, man, especially after Detainment, you know?
Yeah.
And then going into Margaret, it was just so sad, especially as a parent watching Detainment. I mean,
well, and Mother.
Mother, yeah. I mean, they're all rough, man. And I liked Marguerite was my favorite. I thought that was, I really liked that one a lot, but Christ.
Yeah.
Marguerite was, Doug went should and will win on Marguerite, and Chris, you went should and will on Mother.
I went
should Detainment and will on Skin.
Yeah,
and
you nailed that.
Oh, okay,
Criminal Attraction.
Yep, and this is where I start to lose points as we continue.
Oh, I even forgot about that. How do you say it? Is it Fauvre? I forget that French one where the kid watches his kid drown in the quicksand.
Oh my god, yeah, it looked awful. And like, even just watching the trailer or the clip, I'm like, I don't want to see this movie.
It was beautiful. We went Detainment and then that.
Yeah,
and I was like, fuck, man. And then it was French or something, so a fox ran across the screen for no reason. And I was just like, I don't know if I can handle the rest of these.
So there is something to be said. That's why when we get into Best Documentary Feature, it was like, well, the most depressing one didn't win, I guess, because they were saving all of that for the shorts. So now we have sound editing and sound mixing. Often, you know, the same film wins both. It's rare that it splits.
Yeah.
But Bohemian Rhapsody, I figured, because I was looking at it, I'm like, you know, a lot of times a music one usually wins.
Sure, that's true.
Unless it's like all effects-driven Transformers-y nonsense, where then it's just the loudest movie that wins.
But I thought First Man had a good shot at that.
Did you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought, when just talking to the sound people and stuff, and yeah, I thought I had a good shot. But it makes sense with Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, and like Black Panther too, I thought, that's why I put a shoot on that, but Will on Bohemian. Now, did you get that one, Graham?
Yeah, me, you, and Doug all did Will. We all had three different shoulds for sound editing, but all three of us picked Bohemian Rhapsody as the Will, because we, you know, and when we talked about it last week, it all kind of made sense, because knowing, and this is something we referenced, Murray, something you had told us from previous Oscars, is the sound guys always say, oh, the biggest, loudest one. And we're like, so it'll be Bohemian Rhapsody, because there's all those big concert segments, you know, and turns out we were all right.
And now production design is where I start to lose the game, because I got fixated for whatever reason on Mary Poppins Returns, thinking it was going to take home something.
Oh, yeah, I have your sheet, and there's an S and a W next to it.
Yeah, and it was the kind of thing where I'm like, you know, if I hadn't seen that movie, I probably would have done better on a couple of these. Because it was weird. I just had, like, those nostalgia goggles on that film, and really it had no chance of winning anything.
I was perplexed. I got to tell you, Chris, when I left last week's episode, I was like, wow, there's no way Mary Poppins was that good. Yeah. I don't know what the it hell say, it is was happening a, to Chris.
It but. Was an unfounded emotional response.
A lot of the production design was CG, wasn't it, in Black Panther?
A lot of it, for sure.
I don't know. I throw a flag on the play on that one.
Mm-hmm.
So you think, Murray, it should be more of a physical... production design versus a digital one.
Yeah, that's me, but what do I know? You know what I mean? I would rather see, like...
Or a nice mix. Like, you know, if you go back to Blade Runner, that production design is incredible.
Yeah, and I'm not... And look, my wife worked on First Man also, and I'm not just saying that because she worked on it. It was actually... I didn't actually love that movie. But I thought the moon and stuff was all... It was just... I thought it looked great.
I thought the end of that movie looked great. I thought the rest of it was like kind of bland. Like, but I thought the effects at the end with him actually walking on the moon looked really cool. But I thought, well, that doesn't make up for the rest of the other two hours.
the other problem with that movie, in my opinion, it was all shot up close and shaky, so you couldn't even really see the production design, and you couldn't see the costumes.
It was shot for a small television that don't exist anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And, as long as we're on the subject, I would have liked to have seen him get excited about going to the moon. Just for one second.
No, he's an emotionally detached and emotionally stunted for the rest of his life.
You're going to be on the fucking moon.
Yeah.
Smile about it. No. 1 minute. I don't even... you don't have to throw a party. You don't have to write a poem.
And the director yelled, cut. Yeah. Too happy. Yeah. You're just going to the moon.
Yeah.
You're still suffering trauma.
Seriously, you come back to this shit.
Just raise an eyebrow. Anything I would have gone for.
I mean, it's hard not
to smirk.
It's hard not to compare it to Apollo 13. But there's just that one line from Tom Hanks where the guy's like, "Don't you think the moon's getting a little boring?" And he's like, "I can tell you, there's nothing boring about going." That's all you need to hear from Tom. You know exactly how excited he is. Yeah.
Yeah. And they set this whole movie up where he has trauma. He's emotionally stunted and cut off from that. Trauma of losing his child. Mm-hmm. And then the whole movie sets up like, well, we're going to see him heal and get over that, and going to the moon will be part of that. No. Yeah. It never happens. So production design, Black Panther, even though it was in the computer, it's still won. And best documentary short feature. Now, I really thought it was going to be Endgame. I thought period, end of sentence should, but I missed the will. And period end of sentence did get the will. What did you put on will on that one, Graham?
You know, I did that. You and I did this very similar thing. We both did should on period end of sentence. I picked Lifeboat as will, and you picked Endgame. Mm-hmm. And of course, Doug was the one who cleaned up the point because he went should and will on period end of sentence.
Another grouping of really fucking hard to watch.
Doug Benson said the exact same thing.
Holy crap. Mm-hmm. And then we get to the last one I saw was period into sentence, and I didn't know anything about it, and the title came up, and I'm like, oh, sweet. Some brevity here. Maybe it's going to be a grammars about, you know, using our iPhones and poor fucking, you know, typing and emails, and then damn. But I'm glad it won. It was great.
So, and the next is Best Documentary Feature. Now, I have to say, this goes against what we were talking about earlier. All of the Academy's previous years were the most depressing documentary wins.
Right.
And, you know, Free Solo wasn't that. It was like a thrilling kind of IMAX-y, you know, mountain climbing, you know, vistas and, you know, beautiful landscape type film. So I thought RBG was really going to win.
I thought RBG was going to win, especially in this lefty communist Hollywood that we live in. I thought for sure RBG was going to take it down. Hmm. But I loved Minding the Gap. That was
maybe we're not having enough old white men vote. You know, it's maybe we need to, you know, put a stop on all this diversity into the Academy and get back to basics.
It was interesting because Chris. you know, I went Should Win with Free Solo, and then I went Will with RBG, and you went Should and Will with RBG, and Doug made a gutsy call and went Should and Will with Free Solo.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And he nailed
which,
it.
And oh, okay. That woman, the speech, I was a little bummed that I felt like the woman sort of hijacked the speech. You know, and she kept like just breathing and making it about, and she forgot one of her kids. And then there's the goddamn hiker, the guy that did it, that put his life on the line, the hiker, the mountain climber, sort of like hiking, right? Yeah. Just walking up a
just
trail
hiking
with
up.
A dog.
Yeah. He had a backpack and but a walking stick.
No, she did the same thing at the BAFTAs in London. She hijacked the thing.
Wow.
And she hijacked the speech, and it was my least favorite speech of the evening.
Well, the last thing that'll feed an ego is an Oscar, so I'm sure she'll get better.
Yeah,
so.
that ego was well fed before this.
She really was sitting there making it all about her, and it's mm-hmm. like this mm-hmm. guy mm-hmm. risked his life,
absolutely,
and this team of people risked their lives to shoot it, and you are making it all about you.
Yeah, and you were probably sitting in Video Village.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So.
So work on your speech. That's the the takeaway from here.
Or
maybe
somebody else
it's
talk.
A team. I don't know. Yeah. Do that.
Yeah.
Or maybe acknowledge the subject of your documentary. You could do that too. So.
Way down the end of the line.
Yeah.
The guy behind you who the whole reason you're on stage is because of him. Maybe right. Just even look over your shoulder once.
So best adapted screenplay. This was not a surprise. I really thought nothing else was going to win except Black Klansman, because I felt like that was simply the best adaptation of mm-hmm. existing material.
Absolutely. And I think there, I like that. This is my favorite movie of the year, I think.
It's a great
movie. You
know, movie.
I really liked it too. And first, we all, Chris and Doug and I, we all went Should and Will across the board on mm-hmm. Black Klansman, and we were all right. And, you know, it's Spike Lee, you know, he's always written, like, most of his movies, he's written his own screenplay to shoot them, and he's done a really fine job with that over the years. And it's kind of one of those, like, the Academy, you know, they usually reward people later in their careers. And sometimes they do that on a movie that like didn't really deserve it. They're just rewarding past work. But I felt like this was both. Black Kent, he did a really good job as the adapted screenplay, and it is kind of a tip of the hat to all of his previous work.
And I thought he had a great outfit at the Oscars. He
absolutely.
Looked like he just got off of a trolley from Toontown. It was fantastic.
I have to amend my statement. My favorite movie this year was The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. But
well, Mary worked on that movie.
Well,
you?
No, and it literally is, but it kind of says about the whole award season with that movie is I kind of forget it's a movie because it went straight to Netflix.
Yes.
Right.
Okay, so best original screenplay. Honestly, it was not the strongest category.
Mm-hmm.
And I really thought Roma should, but then I thought it was kind of an up-in-the-air category because none of these scripts really stood out. And I thought, oh, we'll probably go to The Favorite because they've won before for screenplay.
Sure.
But wrong.
Yeah, I know.
Wrong. Green Book.
And again, I thought that piece of shit Vice was going to do it just because of the subject matter. But mm-hmm. didn't even come close.
Yeah, Doug was the only one. He only picked Will for Green Book, and he got the point because I went Should and Will with Roma. You went Should, Roma, Will, Favorite. Mm-hmm. Doug went Should, Roma, but he picked Green Book.
Wow, so he was, did?
Wow, yeah.
That's impressive.
He picked, this is where Doug started kind of sneak away a little bit.
Yeah,
he
sure
ended
did.
Up winning.
Uh-huh. And then Graham and I were only 1 point away, but Graham pulled it off. He got 1 point ahead of me. And again, I blame Mary Poppins. So makeup and hairstyling, I'll tell you, I wasn't sure of this one until Doug started talking about the way, you know, anytime that there's a biopic and someone makes someone look like Nixon or,
right.
you know, or...
They win.
And then they win. And then he was... And I thought, oh, you know what? You're absolutely right. Done.
Yeah.
So Weiss should and will. And then I realized I was hoping, too... that you know some of these other movies would get the bigger awards because I didn't think Vice deserved another any of the bigger ones.
No, not at all. I'm not familiar with Border, but I was putting my money on Mary Queen of Scots for mm-hmm. makeup and hair.
But so we all got Vice, didn't we, on this one, Graham?
Yep, we all we all went Should and Will on Vice across the board.
Now, costume design. This was again, I thought one of the stronger categories in the entire Academy. This
oh, absolutely!
Year. I thought this was really good. Again, I almost had Mary Poppins blinders on again, but I was able to see through it. And I remember seeing interviews with Black Panther and the costume designers and the production designers talking about how intricately they created the costumes, how they merged, you know, superhero armor with traditional, you know, African garb. And so I thought, you know what, that one, because it's a meld, because I always think a lot of times the Academy will not just go for a period piece, but if it's like Fantastic Beasts, the kind of thing where it's period, but also there's a fantasy element, so it's something a little, like it's one kilter off of like where it's supposed to be. And I saw that with Black Panther, so I thought that one was going to win. Like, but again, all...
That's
fantastic.
A really strong. I mean, yeah. Mary had a lot of competition this year. That's for sure. And again, I was leaning towards Mary, Queen of Scots, or the favorite of probably. Of course, I thought Ballad of Buster Scruggs should win.
Yes.
and I, you know, and like Mary, you know, like they know their categories. And Mary came in this year going, you know, I have no chance. Let's just drink and have fun this year. You know. So
let me ask you a question about Ballad of Buster Scruggs. It definitely wasn't my favorite Coen Brothers movie.
I loved it.
And I'm a huge fan. You know, it's splitting people a lot because I'm talking to people who loved it and thought it was crazy. And other people like, yeah, I didn't like it that much either. There's nobody that went, that's okay.
It's
one or the other. And there were certain costumes in the way they were put together, like the one where the Liam Neeson section. Like, what's it like designing when you have basically a quadriplegic? Like, and you're designing a costume for him,
right?
Like, that must have been like stuff like that. I thought was really creative and interesting.
Oh yeah, that's again, I don't know if I said this before, but I think this is definitely my wife's best work, and she's done, you know, countless great movies. And I don't know how. I don't know her thinking. Every once in a while, I'll try to get it out. But like the pots and pans outfit in the shootout was so amazing. Right. I remember her sketching that, and I was like, what is that? It's like, oh, he protects himself with pots and pans. So yeah, that would be, if she ever comes on here, you'll have to ask her that question. Or,
well, Murray, I wanted to ask you, since, you know, you're kind of traveling with the same group of folks through all the award season, right? So, and I'm assuming a lot of these costume designers maybe already know each other. So what was that sort of like? Because I saw when Black Panther won, you know, your wife like jumped out of her chair. She was so ecstatic and supportive of them winning. What was that sort of experience like? And you seeing the other award shows and your wife and talking to the other costume designers?
Well, yeah.
What's that whole like experience like?
They all run, you know, they all kind of, they don't run in the same crowd, but they all knew each other. And I just met Ruth Carter that evening. I didn't meet her before, but like Sandy Powell, we hung out with in England, and we've hung out before. And, you know, I think they're all kind of, you know, they're supportive of each other. There's still that little healthy competition, I think. Mary was stoked because she wanted Ruth Carter to win. Oh, I don't know if I should say that, but she was hoping Ruth Carter should win. How's that? Because she was a big fan, and so we were very excited when she won. And then her train got caught under the seat, so I had to pull it out. And then Mary grabbed on to bring it around, and I was like, I was trying to, if you see the video again, I was like, I reached back, I'm like, her husband or boyfriend Larry was there, and I was like, Larry, do you want to help? I mean, I didn't want to, you know, usurp I didn't want to usurp his, you know, help your date. So, but no, everybody was really supportive. I feel.
Isn't there an unwritten rule, though, that all costume designers have to help with a train if someone gets up?
I know. It was like second. It was like, I'm like holding the train. Like, I don't know what the fuck to do. As a matter of fact, Mary wore a train 2 years ago, and I stepped on it every 30 minutes, and it almost killed our marriage. So I don't know how to, I don't know anything about trains, man. But no, I think they're all very supportive, and Mary was happy that she won. And, you know, Mary, you know, she told me, she's like, this year I don't have a chance. You know, she had a chance on La La Land, and it was a different thing. And, you know, I just, we're at the bar beginning of the show, having drinks, talking. And I just said, I'm only going to say this once. You might have to talk tonight. just give it a little thought. That's it.
And that was it. Well, that's so cool, man. You guys have gotten to go, you know, three times, the BAFTAs and all that stuff.
Yeah, you've been going all over. It's great.
Just, that's so amazing. I mean, that's just like...
Yeah, they're really fun.
To see all that. Yeah.
It's right, because it's not my world, so it's really cool to kind of be an outsider and be a fan, but kind of be in the know. And it's great that I'm married to somebody so good in their field who is also a fan.
Right.
So who's not going to be like, oh, Queen's playing. That's interesting. She's going to be up on her feet fucking giving the devil horns.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know? So.
That's so awesome. What a fun show you guys got to be at.
Yeah, especially coming off that James Franco debacle. Our first year. Was our first year?
Oh, yeah.
James Franco and What's Her Face did? Oh,
and Anne Hathaway?
Rough. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That was rough.
You know, that gave a new definition to phoning it in.
Right.
So now we have Best Cinematography. I really thought this was a two-way race between Cold War and Roma. Roma just, it was so stunning,
that
cinematography.
I don't know how you could go. I mean, yeah, we all, Chris, you and I and Doug, we all did Should and Will on Roma, and that's the one that won. I just, like, knowing, first of all, just knowing how good Alfonso Cuarón's movies are normally, and his cinematographer is so amazing, and then he shoots it himself.
He literally won this award because his cinematographer was busy.
Yeah, I mean, that's insane to me. Like, that just, like, that alone, and what he did and how he conveyed the time, the history, the politics, the emotion in his shot composition and camera movement and everything was just, it was just, this is one of my favorite movies of all time.
And I'm sure his cinematographer is going, man, I should have turned down that Fanta commercial and done this movie. So, hilarious. Best original song. Now, honestly, Shella, you don't have Lady Gaga play live and then have her not win an award.
Right.
That wasn't going to happen. So this was a very obvious one. I think this one... And there was a couple that were like, okay, yeah, I can clearly see which one is going to win here.
Right. Well, the thing with, I think, with A Star is Born, and I'm not a huge fan of this remake, but they did it right with the music. They had a really quality people. You had Lucas Nelson, the son of Willie Nelson, wrote a lot on them. Mm-hmm. The guy from... The 400, Jason Isbell wrote a lot on it. Gaga wrote a lot of great writers and producers. So they did the music right, I think, on this.
They understood how important it should be.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and it is it's a solid song.
Yeah.
You know, it's a, it deserved to win, even though it wasn't Lady Gaga singing it.
Sure. But I have to say this. Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say, because this is one of the things I missed, this speech, because I was performing. What was that like when they won?
Lady Gaga's, it was kind of what you expected. Yeah. It honestly didn't, I in a weird way, I was a little disappointed on it because it covered the same ground she always covers. Like, this is actually an opportunity to say something new or different.
Sure.
But she just kind of hit all the old talking points. Like,
follow your dreams, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, don't give up. It's going to take a long time. You know, don't listen to anybody. You know,
pays off.
Yeah. So,
come on.
So there wasn't a lot of meat to that speech.
So, that was a good speech. You can never hear enough of that. But I will drink the Mary Poppins Kool-Aid on this. The place where lost things go when she performed that.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh man, this is cool. This is like reminds me of the Oscars I was grew up watching.
And
I gotta say the set design on this show was fantastic.
It was really good.
It was really amazing.
And that was probably the most solid song in the whole movie.
Yeah.
So best original score again. This is where Mary Poppins fucked me over again. I don't even know if Mary Poppins wasn't on there, I would have picked Black Panther best original score. I probably would have. I don't know what I would have picked if it wasn't for that one.
Yeah, because you had S&W on this.
I had S&W on Mary Poppins Returns. So now, Graham, what did you have on this one, original score?
Well, Doug and I both did Should and Will on Black Panther because I don't think we had a tumor in our heads like you did.
Shaped like an
really
animated penguin.
This was so puzzling. This is where I was starting to worry about my friend Chris when he just kept going.
You know, every once in a while, you get those nostalgia movie goggles on, and they're hard to take off.
A spoonful of Kool-Aid.
Yeah. But they're off now. And best film editing. Now, honestly, this is... I probably should have seen this coming just because, you know, a lot of times with sound mixing and sound editing and any kind of music film, a lot of times is definitely up for editing. But I was thinking about Vice, the way that it was edited together with, you know, horrific war footage, images of, you know, the actors in between, and then, you know, monologues into the camera. I thought, editing wise, I thought, well, this might get the award because it has a lot of different elements to it. But then I thought maybe Black Klansman might pull it off too. I wasn't really seeing Bohemian Rhapsody for editing.
You say a lot of different elements. I say way too many.
Yeah. Can't argue that point.
Seriously.
Totally agree.
Pick a tone and go with it.
This is the one of the few categories where I was the only one who picked it right. I went Should and Will on Bohemian Rhapsody. Mm-hmm. Doug went Should and Will on Vice. And, you know, Chris was all over the map. I don't know. I think that it knowing a, like, what the Academy sort of looks for with the editing category, and I think it's sort of in the same vein of, you know, sound, you know, like Murray has said, the loudest one wins, or sometimes the biggest, and costume design, it's the biggest, craziest costumes, not necessarily the most intricate. I think in film editing, they look at, like, the biggest cut, like, big, obvious cuts, you know, and cutting back and forth. And I think there was a lot of that in Bohemian Rhapsody, which is why it took it.
Mm. It's interesting. I have Chris's piece of paper here, and he has should win Black Klansman, will win Vice, and then he wrote in Mary Poppins. I just noticed that.
So I always like to add a box if I can. So now, best visual effects. I thought this was an upset. I really
never saw this coming.
No, I didn't. And, you know, especially like I said, First Man, I thought had great effects at the end for a couple of minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of the movie I thought was very flat and drab. But I didn't think Avengers, I didn't think Christopher Robin, I didn't think Solo, I didn't think any of those were going to win because it's all effects we've seen before. So I really thought it was going to be Ready Player One, which was so inventive and imaginative and had, you know, different things all kind of combined. So I really thought Ready Player One was going to take this, but no, didn't see First Man coming on this one.
Well, I'm glad it won. I'm glad it won, because my wife worked on it and I have a lot of friends on it, but this isn't my strong category. I don't really have an opinion on this category because I didn't see Avengers. I didn't see Christopher Robin. I didn't see Ready Player One. I didn't see a Solo Star. I saw First Man.
So you voted for the movie that you saw in this category.
Yeah.
Got it.
I thought it was between Ready Player One and Avengers because of the degree of effects that were used in those two films to paint the worlds that they lived in. So yeah, First Man. And I remember thinking, like, well, there's no way they're going to give it to First Man because Gravity won this several years ago, and because Gravity was amazing. They spent the whole movie in space.
Yes.
But, you know.
And, you know, you had the destruction of space stations very early on in the film that were visually amazing. So, bit of an upset there. And then Best Supporting Actor, you know, all these are good performances with the exception of Sam Rockwell, who was doing a sketch character.
It would have been good in a different movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It would have been good in a comedy about George W. Bush.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, this looked like, he's doing W from Oliver Stone's.
Oh, yeah, 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 really, right, of course.
Yeah. So Mahershala Ali, I really thought he deserved it, and I'm glad he won.
I'm going Richard. I wanted Richard E. Grant.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted Sam Elliott, which, you know, I'm just a fan of his. I got to meet him this year, which was great.
Oh, cool.
Mary obviously knows him from the dude. Big Lebowski. So we got to hang out with him for a while.
Oh, cool.
What's he like? Is he the same
way
as you would expect?
He was in a really sharp tuxedo and cowboy boots.
Nice.
So it was, and he just has that voice. And I said, you know, congratulations. I'm a big fan. He's like, oh, thank you, Murr, and walked away.
Nice.
Oh, God. That's fantastic.
So,
called you Murr.
I know, right? I really feel like I'm really bummed at Richard E. Grant. I felt like a lot of people were expecting him to win, and didn't. Especially more. I'm sorry. More. That was more at the BAFTAs also because right. he didn't. I don't think he wanted to. Yeah.
Now, did we all get Mahershala Ali?
We all picked that should and will across the board, all three of us.
Now, supporting actress.
I like all these performances. I feel the same way. Like Adam Driver did a good job. I like Sam Elliott. Richard E. Grant was really good in Can You Ever Forgive Me? And I feel the same way like Sam Rockwell. Like you said, he was a little too over the top. Of all of those performances, it was Mahershala Ali that had the most like poignant acting moments in terms of conveying, especially in film, right? So those when you go to the close-up, and they're making just very small micro expressions on their face, but they're conveying so much that has a lot to for me at least.
Yes,
of what makes a good like screen actor.
And best supporting actress, Regina King. I figure should will, and I thought The Favorite. I dismissed those immediately. I thought maybe Roma, possibly Marina de Tavira, but Amy Adams, no. But I thought pulling it out would be Regina King.
Yeah, you had her both win and should.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got a little Roma'd on this, and I love Regina King. I'm glad she won. I missed this. What was her speech like?
Oh man, her speech was fantastic. If I remember correctly, it's a little the nights are a little blurry for me to remember, but I remember her just. She looked fantastic. She had an amazing white dress on.
She had a great speech.
Mm-hmm. Oh, she talked to her mom, right? Yeah, and I remember. Oh, it was beautiful. I loved it. There are a lot of good speeches this year. I teared up a few times. I'm not going to lie to you.
Oh. That's good.
I'm also a pussy.
Were there any big speeches that really stood out for any? Like anybody say any crazy stuff?
Well, Michael Moore had a speech outside the building. I don't know. I'm trying to think if there was one that really stood out.
I don't think there was any real insane speeches. I think all the speeches were really good, and the ones that blew.
Yeah.
Pre-solo they really stood out as bad speeches because the speeches were quality this year, I think.
If you get into like Spike Lee's speech for best adapted screenplay, it's the only reason like it's getting all these headlines is because Trump responded to it, but at the end of the day when you look at the speeches and like, was it really that controversial or no, it wasn't at all. Selling people to get out and vote, that's what Trump doesn't want.
From a technical standpoint, for watching at home, they cut off a lot. Could you hear it in the room?
Oh, they did. You know what they did? They cut off a couple people's, and you couldn't hear them. They cut off Spike's.
Well, it also sounded like Spike was cursing a lot because there was some dropout.
He did. He did. He did swear right up top, too.
Yeah, because I'm like, I think there's either something wrong with my cable or Spike is swearing.
Yeah, Spike's swearing, and then they cut him off, and they cut off...
So did the Free Solo guy. He said, holy shit.
Oh, he did? Yeah. Well, at least he got to say something.
Yeah. For him. That's all he could get on, and then they could get bleeped.
Yeah, it seemed like if you took any space at all, they were cutting you, and we couldn't tell if the mic was still on in the room.
Yeah, the Free Solo guy's, God, I get to talk more when I'm in the middle of a mountain.
But I read the first. What was the first category? I remember the first category, and whoever won, and maybe it was best supporting actress.
Best supporting actress.
Yeah, and she was, and I was like, oh right, there's no. And I looked down because we were still in the front row at that time, and there was no orchestra pit. And I'm like, oh, I wonder if they're gonna take a page out of the BAFTAs and not play anybody off.
Right.
And then I guess they had piped in, or maybe I guess the orchestra was under the stage because they eventually started playing people off.
Yep. So now we have Best Actor. Now, this was, I really thought this was another one that was like, well, I think it's going to go to Rami Malek, especially because that's all you're hearing about is how great his performance was in that movie. Viggo Mortensen, I didn't think so. Bradley Cooper. Now, every once in a while, an actor wins that does a great performance in a movie that's not nominated for anything else. So you figure Willem Dafoe might have been the spoiler a little bit in there. And Christian Bale, I think we all agree, it was just a grunts and makeup, and that was
grunts and makeup.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of.
That was my favorite musical on Broadway.
Grunts and makeup. Yeah,
I loved it.
There was a lot of nuance in that performance. So we all got Rami Malek on this one, didn't we?
Yeah, we all picked him across the board.
Mm-hmm.
In hindsight, I pick Rami. Again, I thought Christian Bale was going to, just because of the subject matter in Christian Bale, I thought he was going to take it. But Rami Malek, I really like. There's rumor that there were, and I don't know this for sure, but there's rumor that there were some dance doubles for his lower shots.
Oh, really?
I didn't hear that.
There's some rumors floating around like that. But I thought he was great.
Who can confirm or deny?
Right. Anybody out there can confirm or deny. But I thought, you know, up against the... Looking at the categories now, I would give it to Rami, although, you know, it really is an impression.
Now, best actress, I think we all missed this one.
This is the only category where none of us
got any
picked
of
one.
Should or
no
will.
One got this right. Mm-mm. Nothing.
The only reason I got it right was because she won at the BAFTAs.
Right.
That's the only reason.
I really feel like this was one of those ones where she's not being rewarded for this film. She's being rewarded for a very... illustrious career leading up to this, because you know, the other thing that I was infuriated about is the way that The Favorite got submitted to the Oscars, because Olivia Colman's the supporting actress, and the leads are actually Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz. You could even argue that Emma Stone is really the lead. It's her story.
Oh, that's right.
And so that's the other thing that like made these categories messed up, because you know, you see this more in Golden Globes where the categories get weird and skewed, but this one for sure was like, what? This doesn't make any sense.
Well, there's several things in here too. Like, you, Glenn Close has never won, so it kind of thought maybe they would just throw her a bone for her life, you know, her career.
Right.
And then I don't know. I thought the woman, I can't really pronounce her name, but in Roma she was so
Yalitza.
Yalitza. She was amazing. But I think sometimes understated performances like that, like she doesn't have big scenes where she's crying or, you know, she's just conveying all this emotion in these very subtle ways. Sometimes those get overlooked, which I guess this makes sense, because then Olivia Colman's doing accents and gowns every year.
I mean, really, the Favorite was pretty much a Merchant Ivory film with a script pass for dirty jokes.
Yeah,
it's really all it was. So, you know, when we get to Best Director, this is where I kind of... I had a theory on this that didn't pan out. I really thought that they were going to give Spike Lee director for Black Klansman, then they were going to go Roma for Best Picture. I thought it was going to split like that, but it did not at all. So Best Director, I had should for Alfonso, but he ended up winning it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we both, Chris, you and I both did the same thing, and Doug did the should will. And I think Alfonso Cuarón, I believe this was his speech where he thanked the Academy for, because it was the first time an indigenous woman's story was recognized by the Academy, which I thought that was a pretty cool speech and thing for him to bring up, which was like, it is an amazing, you know, the thing, Academy is very slow moving, but, you know, I'm glad that this movie got, in my opinion, should have won Best Picture, but I'm glad it got at least Best Director and one or two other awards, because it, you know, when would we ever know about Mexico City and the politics that were happening in Mexico at that time, you know, through the eyes of an indigenous housekeeper, it was really, cool. I want to hear more interesting stories that we haven't heard before, which is why like Mary, Queen of Scots and The Favorite, like I've seen those stories every year for the last 30 years. Oh, I don't care about that era of makeup and wigs.
Wouldn't it be more accurate to say you've not seen those movies for the last 30 years?
I've intentionally avoided those movies for the last 30 years because they're all the same.
Yeah. So, you know, it's, we weren't expecting it as far as like, you know, but we both thought he should win it for sure, the best director. So now I think let's get to Best Picture. Best Picture, a bit of a surprise to us. I really thought this was going to be Roma, but I also thought maybe Black Klansman or Bohemian Rhapsody was going to win, but I did not think Green Book was going to win Best Picture.
I don't think anybody
Doug was the only one who picked it.
Oh, he did?
He did.
Yep,
oh, wow.
He picked it as a will. We all picked, Chris and I all picked should and will for Roma. Doug went should will for Roma, but he picked will win for Green Book, which was like, that was a bold choice.
Yeah.
And I don't think it was Best Picture by a long shot.
Because
if
Roma wasn't going to win, like Green Book wouldn't have been my second choice out of this list.
No.
Right. I thought Black Klansman was going to take it.
So did I. Yeah,
There was an audible gasp in the room when they announced Green Book.
That doesn't surprise me. Now, what was the tone and the murmurs like when Green Book was up there accepting Best Picture? Like, were people turning around, looking, talking at each other?
It wasn't until the after party, until afterwards, when we're walking out, and then all our friends are like, man, Spike just fucking shit all over Green Book. And he's, and people, were like, no, nobody saw it coming. And then we were like trying to get on our phones to find out what Spike said. And so, yeah, he wasn't happy. I don't know if you know that or not.
What did he say? He said the Academy will never recognize a story that's a total black person. So how did he say it? Something like that? Like,
well, what he said, he made a funny joke. He actually said that, you know, when Do the Right Thing lost, it was to Driving Miss Daisy. Oh. And now he lost to Green Book. He's like, you know, it's always a black person and a white person in the car. They just switch drivers.
Jeez. So. And he also said at the afterwards, he's like, what was this quote? The I had like court seats and the ref made a bad call.
I mean, we talked about it on several episodes, you know. As far as just a movie goes, Green Book is well made. Those are good actors. Mm-hmm. It's good character arcs and all that stuff. But then when
really strong performances, I thought was the most appealing part of that movie.
Viggo Mortensen and Marshall Ali, they're really good. They're great actors, and they did a great job in there. And great directing by Peter Farrelly, you know. So, but when you uncover the fact that Hollywood whitewashed that movie and Hollywood has such a history of whitewashing and making the white racist guy kind of the hero. When that wasn't the reality, the real guy was fired. They did not remain friends. And Marshall Ali's character, he knew about black music, and he had, you know, had eaten fried chicken. He needed a white guy to tell him that. That's when it really sort of Hollywood's long history of
Viggo
racist and whitewashing.
Totally.
It sours it.
Totally. And then there's all those... you know, like Viggo Mortensen's going to be your black culture Sherpa. You know, like it makes no sense.
And then there's all those weird blurbs. I haven't really read any of the articles, just the headlines of like the writers like upset that, I didn't know that they were still alive. And, you know, when they were writing about them, I didn't know the family. Right. I didn't talk to the family. I didn't. Oh,
really? Oh, because we don't have the internet?
Yeah, seriously. It's almost like they're trying to separate themselves.
Yeah. Or a team of production assistants that could have made a few calls.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, that's the issue right there. It shows you the sort of systemic problem in Hollywood. Somebody bought the rights to this story. And they went, okay, well, write the Hollywood version of it. Don't interview the family. Don't get it accurate. Just give us the Hollywood version where the white guy's the hero and they're all buddies. And it was just like, that just shows you the problem in Hollywood. They didn't even think. That was nowhere. No one even mentioned, hey, is the family alive? Can we get some research on this? It's like, nope. Just write the story the way Hollywood always wants to tell it so that white audiences, can assuage their guilt.
Well, and it's also from the perspective of the driver. He was one of the writers.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Right. Right. So, but there you go.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Let the white guy tell the story of this highly gifted black musician.
Well, at least they hired a black actor. So...
You know, it's baby steps, Chris. It's baby steps.
Yeah, baby steps. Right.
Got to learn to crawl before you can walk.
Yeah. So, ladies and gentlemen, that is our Academy Awards wrap-up. I have to say, too, like, I would be perfectly fine if they never used another host.
I really thought
it moved a little bit better. I think there is still work to be done on this award show, for sure. But I think there were definitely some steps in the right direction.
Absolutely.
So it was definitely the worst show we've seen, Oscar show we've seen.
Now they can get U2 to open next year. That would be fantastic.
Yeah,
would start going through my childhood.
Murray, I want to ask you this. So you've been to three of them now. Uh-huh. You've been to a bunch of different BAFTAs and stuff like this. Where, of the ones you've been to, where do you put this one? In terms of just overall shows.
The show I thought was fantastic. The show was great. I thought this is my favorite. Although we were there 2 years ago, I thought Kimmel did a pretty decent job, but then they had that real fuck up at the end with La La Land.
Oh, of course.
And, I think the first time is just always going to be great, even though it was hosted by James Franco and those guys. You know, it's always going to be great because it was so exciting. But I'd say this is definitely one of my favorites. And
cool.
Yeah, and personally, it was a lot of fun because we ended up hanging out with Spike Lee a lot, and I got to meet Brian May.
How were the after parties? What were they like?
The after parties were all right. The BAFTAs after parties were fantastic. Can I tell you a quick story?
Of course.
All right, so we get to the BAFTAs in London, and on the first night, we're jet lagged, we're tired, we're just kind of, there's a cocktail party, and we're going early. I'm doing a set at the Comedy Club in London, so I just want to go home and rest. And on the way out, Mary sees Spike Lee, and we're with our Netflix handler, and she's like, oh my God, I got to meet Spike Lee before I leave. And the Netflix handler's like, well, let's do it now. Might not get another chance. Come on, here he is. Let's go. And I'm like, I don't really have much to say to Spike Lee, you know.
Right.
I know his Mars Blackman work out of it and everything else he's done, you know. Right. So I kind of hang back. And so I hear him like, Mary's over. He's Spike, Coen Brothers. And you hear echo through the thing, Coen Brothers, NYU boys. And then Spike storms off. And so, and so later on, we're at, I talked to Mary. I'm like, how was that? She's like, oh, that's great. I want to work with him. You know, he's one of my favorite directors. He has no idea who I am, but I wanted to work with him.
Did the Netflix hander give your wife a list of trigger words not to avoid when talking to Spike Lee?
No. So we get to the BAFTAs that night, or two nights later, and we're there, and I see Brian May. Brian May walks in with Roger Taylor, and I'm like, I want to meet Brian May before we leave here. And the Netflix goes, do it now. You might not get another chance. I'm like, all right. So she walks me over, and then and Brian May's talking to somebody, and so I'm waiting behind, you know, and the Netflix person leaves, and I'm about to go in, and then Mary taps me on the shoulder with her cell phone. She's like, we got to get a picture. If you meet Brian May, we got to get a picture. I'm like, sweet. All right. So the guy leaves. I say, hey, Brian, Murray Valeriano, big fan. Love the movie, blah, blah, blah. Favorite guitar player, you know, just totally fanning out a little bit. Mm-hmm. And he has a house in Larchmont nearby where we used to live. Oh, I used to live by blah. Oh, that's great. I go, I know it's not protocol right now, but I'd love to get a quick picture with you. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, as you know, you don't even give him a chance to say yes or no. You're just like, I'd love to get a quick picture. Turn, smile, click, out. And so I'd love to get a quick picture. He's like, and I turn and smile. Mary's gone. Nobody there. We're looking at an empty staircase to the stage, and then it's me and Brian May, and he's like, maybe later. I'm like, yeah, good call. Yeah, good call. So I feel like a complete asshole. I turn around, I'm like, where the fuck is Mary?
You should have played it out like there was somebody still there. All right, smile.
Yeah, okay, and hold.
Yeah.
Well, all right, we're gonna try another one.
Yeah.
So I look around, I'm like, where the fuck is Mary? I turn around, and she's talking to Spike Lee. I walk over to hear Mary go, 323-467-3. And I'm like, what?
Great.
I turn my back on you for 5 minutes and you're giving your number to Spike Lee. What the hell's going on here? And Spike's like, I want to work with this woman. So apparently he Googled her between Friday and Sunday.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Figured it out.
Nice.
And then we ran into him at the Oscars and got a bunch of pictures with him and stuff. So.
Oh, that's great. Oh, very cool. Mm-hmm. You cultivated a relationship with Spike Lee over the course of a couple of award shows.
Well, within a weekend.
Yeah.
Well, that's how you got to do it, man. Yeah. I mean, for sure. Like, you gotta go.
Hold on.
You gotta go hustle business. Right. I mean, that's what that's all about.
Right. Totally. And then his purple outfit really accentuated Mary's red outfit. I'm showing Chris a picture of those two together.
Actually, looks great. Yeah.
Well, what? Anything singularly, aside from obviously Queen coming out and just rocking, that stood out for you from the show itself or the night?
What really did stand out? Again, I really thought the speeches were fantastic this year. I did. I teared up a couple of times, you know, and I really thought the speeches stood out. That's going to be the standout for the show for me, I think.
Well, I think if...
And the stage sets, again, they were spectacular. Really,
I think because of the success of Queen opening, I really think next year it's going to be Elton John. Because Rocket Man's coming out.
I think
I think Elton John will open next year.
We hung out with the costume designer of Rocket Man in London, and he was telling us about the costumes and stuff. And it should be cool. I'm excited to see
that. That's awesome.
As a matter of fact, that's who Brian May excused me for at the picture to go talk to the costume designer, because I think he did a Bohemian Rhapsody also.
Very cool.
Yeah, he did do a Bohemian Rhapsody.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that is our 91st Academy Awards wrap-up show. And, I want to mention this one thing. This isn't the Academy Awards, but it is film-related. While I was live-tweeting the Oscars, I was reading some of the notification tweets, and somebody tweeted that made me laugh out loud. It's like somebody was angry about my review of Polar on Netflix, and they said it was not nearly as good as I made it out to be. So, yeah, if you want to see one of the worst movies ever made, watch Polar on Netflix.
Oh, snap.
So, ladies and gentlemen, let's turn it over to Murray. Where can people find you online or live in a
show? Well, first of all, thank you for doing. I love coming to do your show every 2.5 years. I have to say this. These are all my opinions. This is nothing I've said is Mary's opinion. So Joel and Ethan, keep hiring her. Damien, Giselle, keep hiring her. It has nothing to do with anything that Mary has. Spike, put her on the next one. So that's all aside. These are my opinions, not Mary's. Other than that, at Murray V on Twitter, Murray Valeriano, Murray V Comedy on Instagram. When does this drop?
Today.
Oh, all right. Well, then I will be... I'm doing a quick set in Phoenix, Tempe Improv on Thursday. I'm passing through, so I'm doing a set there if you want to come out. I'll be at Ontario Improv with Cristela Alonso this weekend, and then headlining Levity Live in Oxnard, March 21st. Other than that, social media all over the place.
Awesome. All right.
Nice. Thanks. Guys, like I said, all my tour dates and everything are at grahamelwood.com. In Chicago tonight, Rosemont through the weekend, and then Progressive Comedy Tour in the Gulf States in March. We go to Texas in April, Salt Lake City and Boise in May, and the big East Coast swing is in June. We hit Philly, D.C., Baltimore, New Haven, Connecticut, New York City, Boston. So again, go to grahamelwood.com for all that. Yeah.
Awesome.
And I want to mention that Conversation from the Abyss is still dropping. We've got 5 more episodes to drop, and we've got some great upcoming performers like Janet Varney, the Sklar Brothers, and many, many more that are coming up. Hal Lublin, Mark Agliardi, some really cool, creepy stories, and also Paul Gilmartin and Laura House. Laura House plays a phone. in an upcoming episode. So I want to mention that. Make sure you subscribe to Conversations from the Abyss, and also give it a great review on iTunes. All that stuff helps. And we want to mention, too, for Comedy Film Nerds, you know, we appreciate you Patreon supporters, but also other ways to support the show that are free. Great reviews, sharing, liking, spreading the word, all that stuff is incredibly helpful. So we want to thank all you guys for listening.
Yep.
And all right, that is our show. Ladies and gentlemen, wrap it up, put it in the can, episode 456, Academy Awards wrap-up. We will be back next week with a regularly formatted show.
That's right. Thank you, Murray Valeriano. Thank you, Aaron. Thank you for setting up the crazy Skype call. It's the first time we've done this, and it seemed to work out.
Absolutely.
So.
Mm-hmm. I didn't think there wasn't like a lot of static or delays. I thought it worked great.
Yeah, it was nice business. So... thank you everybody for listening, and my name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini, and as always, remember, Han shot first. All right, there was a little delay.
Han shot first. Damn it, I missed it.
Yeah, we really stumbled over each other, so the Han shot first we need to iron out. But right. Thanks for listening.
Fix it in post.
Thanks, guys.